Hello, foodies. My name is John, also known as Food Coaching. And today we are bringing you episode 413 of the Food in Review podcast. Today is all about the weekend league sweat and how you can deal with that. And of course, what is the crew doing actually for Team of the Season? Let's start by introducing our co-host today, starting with the Angel of the North, the head of Food Coaching UK. It is the man that can eat two sausage rolls in a halftime match. It's none other than Aaron Glue.
Hello.
Hello, mate. It's been a while.
What an introduction.
It's true, though.
Yeah, those sausage rolls were absolutely fire.
So for everyone listening, what's this about? Yes, Aaron and myself visited Scotland this weekend. So we've been to a match from the Hearts. And that was a really bad match, honestly. But we had some fun. So I had my, like in the Netherlands, when you go to the stadium, you can get fries or burgers. That's basically it. And maybe a beer if you're lucky, right? If you even manage to get in there, out of the line before the match actually ends. But this was much more doable. So we went to get a little snack in halftime, and so we asked, what's typical Scottish? And Aaron says, oh, you should get the Scottish pie. So I asked, okay, what's that? And he said, Scottish. That's how the weekend went, just to say. But hey, Aaron, it's good to see you, mate. And you're wearing a lovely beanie, although I do think it still has the sticker on top of the head of the thing. So let's figure that one out before I actually introduce our other co-host tonight, which is making, or who is making his third appearance, making it a trick worthy. And of course, hereby we give him his nickname. It is the man who puts his X-Wing on attack mode on, of course, May the 4th, which is also Star Wars Day. It's Paul the X-Wing Clemens. Hey, Paul.
Hey, good evening. May the 4th be with you all. Good to be back.
What a timing to be on, mate.
Oh, yeah, tell me about it. I'm really pleased that I was available, could do it, and can't wait to get involved tonight. It's great.
It's brilliant. Good to be back. It's good to see you here again.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I honestly, it was your second appearance, so I made the nickname on the spot. But hey, you like wing play. You're an X-Wing pilot in the films. I think, hey, it's a perfect fit, right?
It works. It works very well.
Yeah.
Cheers.
I think we might change it once Chris gets to know this episode, but hey, we'll see how this goes. Let me start, Aaron, by asking you, my friend. Of course, we were away in the weekend, but hey, EA was so kind to extend the weekend league with 2 days, so we had time to play when we came back. Although, if you, by the way, flying from Europe to the islands this time around, you actually have to put in 2 extra travel days because of all the plane delays. But that's something else. Aaron, we did still have a full day of playing weekend league. Was it as sweaty for you as it was for me?
Yeah, it was horrific. I mean, there was a couple of factors behind why. So one was I was horrifically tired because I played Sunday when I got back. I knew I had a window to play. So I played it. I was like a zombie, right? I could not, I don't think I could barely move my controller properly. I was so bad. I think I went, this is bad start, right? I think I was, I'd won 2, lost 4. I think I lost 4 in a row. I was like, my God, I should just stop now. But I thought, no, I'll carry on. And I played all the way up. And then, like, my last session, I kind of left the last 3 games, right? Get 14 wins, I needed to win 2 of the last 3 games. Normally, it's really easy. So I, won 1, and then I lost 2 in a row, which meant I finished on 13 wins. But I am also going to blame the internet connection because everyone was in the house. Everyone was on Netflix. My bandwidth died and the guy scored a goal because I just totally glitched out. At that point, I lost it. As we all know, I'm a heart player, which meant I was tired. So, yeah, I didn't play as well as I could do. I was a bit disappointed. But was it sweaty? Was your question? It's a tough ride. So, yes, it was. People were trying harder. I don't think I had anybody quit. And everyone does everything they can to, like, get maximum rewards for minimal effort.
Or to get maximum under your skin, I've noticed.
Yeah, so it was, and I think I'd signposted this, like, ahead of our last masterclass, right? It was going to be sweaty, and you're going to come up against those opponents you probably haven't played for a while. There's something to play for. Next 6-7 weeks are going to be exactly the same. So I think it's just time to, you know, buckle in and stay cool and trust your gameplay, and you win, definitely. But yeah, it was frustrating, but I can't measure it fully because I was so tired. So yeah, but it was definitely a bit harder.
Paul, were you tired and/or did you play Weekend League?
Played Weekend League. I mean, I'm still deprived of my PS5 because we're having renovation works done in the house, and the room that I play in with all the equipment and everything is right next door to where most of the work is being done at the moment. So too much dust, so it's all covered. So I'm reliant on my son giving me some of his time on his PS5, me logging in and playing. So it's really frustrating at the moment that I have to cram in quite a lot of games to qualify for Weekend League and then play it. My Weekend League, thank God for the extension, really was crammed in on Monday, and I got to 11-9, so I played out all of the games. I thoroughly enjoyed it, but just because I'm playing FIFA less at the minute. So from my perspective, I was just relieved to be playing. I kept calm, quite remarkably, bearing in mind I've been playing less whilst we've been getting this renovation work done. I found that all of the techniques and disciplines that I've been learning through foot coaching, which stopped my first batch of foot coaching about 7 weeks ago now, it seems to have stuck pretty well. So that saw me through well in general. 11-9 isn't the greatest set of results, I suppose, but I enjoyed the experience. And I've continued in the background because I've not been able to play. I've been doing a lot of SBCs, pulling really good players. So trying some of those out has been good fun.
Paul, the pack pulling master.
That's it. It's continuing, unfortunately, for many, but I'm enjoying it.
That's good.
It's funny you say, sorry, John, I was just going to jump on the back of what Paul said. I think it's interesting what you said because I'm probably playing the least now that I have this whole cycle. So I probably go at least 1 or 2 days now between picking up a controller. And I find actually I start better. I don't play for as long. I'm literally probably playing the minimum just to get rewards now and, you know, qualify for Weekend League, do my Weekend League. That's pretty much it. I've not touched swaps, but I do find I play better, actually, I think, because of it.
I got back Monday late, very late on Monday, because, well, the plane were actually on time this time, Aaron, but now the trains were out when I finally arrived. So that was a wonderful end. So I was able to start my first Weekend League on Monday morning, 11 a.m. I was like, yeah, that might be a bit difficult to get 20 games in on one day, which Paul seems to do and shake it out of his sleeve, but I usually can't really do that. And I was expecting, maybe some quits, right? But my first match started out like this. I started sharp, focused, motivated. Let's go for it. And I had a 4-0 lead within 15 in-game minutes. Like, alrighty then, this could be a quit, right? And my opponent put his controller on rubber bands and left. That was the first match of my Weekend League. So we're playing here Tuesday morning. I'm leaning 4-0. You still get a point when you quit, but the guy or girl, I don't know, remained in the game. So I send a message like, do you really have to rubber band and play? Because, hey, you still get a point. You can just quit if you're 4-0 behind, right? He says, nope. I got a response back. And the response was, nope, just ruining your time. Which was lovely to start off with. And I have to admit, I usually don't get frustrated. But that reply sort of frustrated me already. It was my first game. I'm like, it might be a long day, actually, right? Oh, anyways, I started off pretty well. 7-0. That was my first stint, 7-0. So I was actually really happy. I have to admit that it went really smoothly until 12 wins. I was 12-3, I think. And I ended on the skin of my teeth on a whopping 14 wins. Which was enough for the team of the season back, right? But boy, oh boy, did I have to fight for this one. The opponents were amazingly stacked. At least their teams were, right? The way of playing was extremely frustrating. I played someone who scored from kickoff. They're a really good player, really good team though, right? I saw in moment one, oh, that's actually pretty good, the player. He scored, and I was like, this might be a tough one. And then he's changed formation to a 5-4-1 and start hoofing the ball around the back. We were 6 minutes in the game. I have to admit, I equalized in the, I think, 87th minute. Highly frustrated. And I scored the winner in the 90 minutes, which made my day and got me my 14th win. But if you're already playing that, and you see the stakes are now on community team of the season and, of course, the Eredivisie season, then I'm expecting a whole lot more of sweatiness this weekend. But yeah, my frustration levels were all over the place. I don't get tilted, but I get frustrated by this kind of behavior. I think that's it. I don't get frustrated by what's going on in the game. You can have 7 own goals or drop back balls or counters, really don't care. But it's the human behavior which sort of tells me, because we're all in the same boat here, right? We're all in the same thing. And we're still trying to frustrate each other until, I don't even know.
But this is funny though, right, isn't it? Because this is what players do know. It's like that, and they know that now they have the control. So if they're not going to win, they're just going to make you feel bad. This is the only version of FIFA this has ever happened in that I know of. It's horrific. The culture is so toxic now. It's not even I would say balanced. I just think if a player knows that they're going to lose to you, they don't even quit anymore. They just elongate the game just on purpose.
It can be worse though. Because I played my 20 weekend league games, but it costed me 34 games. Because 14 people quit when it was still equalized, or one quit when I'm actually about to get a penalty. And those don't count as wins. So I had to go into 34 games with all this toxic behavior to get my 20 games done. And I still got a ton on a Tuesday, which sort of was amazing, but my hand still hurt about that. And my head also a little bit. Also, did you know what I get from the Team of the Season pack, which we got? A whopping 90k of Team of the Season players. 90k, right? So, yeah, I got a red pack, Laurie, which was, I think, sort of all
right. Oh, you got Hugo. I think everyone got Hugo Lloris, right, in their picks?
Yeah, nobody gets the good players. But I got Lloris twice from a player pick. I got Lloris once out of pack, and I got Lloris from a red pick. So, yeah, I'm pretty much, it's good for Fodor, I guess. But I don't think you have to do this for rewards. And I think this is the key. Don't do this for rewards. I think it is the best time of the season to test yourself, because you know everyone you're playing against is on their maximum performance/focus level. It's also the best way to test your mental ability to stay sane, I guess.
But do you know what though, right? Why have EA made it 14 wins, right? Because
that should be 11, right?
14 wins in a non-toxic environment, that can still be a bit of a stretch because it requires concentration. Anyway, and I think for like maybe some of the players who are maybe in Division 3, 2, you know, at the end of the cycle, right? That's a stretch. That's hard. They're going to come up against some good players in that. You know, 14 wins for me, you know, I'm certainly not being arrogant here, but I've been able to get 14 wins pretty much every one, maybe by one or two. 17 wins, yes, as well. But now all of a sudden, 14 wins, people are just going to play so crazy bad, toxic, just to get. And I feel like it would, in a way, it would be the players who will benefit from the kind of lazier way of playing, which I've talked about before, because they can do less to get the results. And I think those players, like maybe me and others who actually play the game, try and play the game the way a game of football is supposed to be played. We put in more effort. Well, all the other person's got to do is, you know, they can rely on an auto block. They can, you know, do some of the easier mechanics, spam a through ball, right? And then I know it can be defended. But when you're facing the same players 9-10 games in a row, having to concentrate, it's tough going, right? And I got bored at points this weekend, probably because I was tired, but playing against the same opponent every game. And I've talked about that before as well. It is so boring.
I still think these players don't get the 14 wins, though.
I think they probably will. I think they get the 14 wins because, I think they will, because, and I think you'll start to see the red picks in their teams with that will kind of, and some of the, you know, other whatever. I do think they do get it. And I'd love if there was anyone who's listening who does play that way and does get kind of consistently high wins. I'd love to bring them onto the show and understand like their approach to the game, and, you know, because I think for me it's really interesting.
I'd love to get someone on the show who can explain me why would Robert Bento weekend league though.
Yeah,
I honestly can't find an answer that. Paul, any clues there?
No, I think it's probably just a bit of spite or jealousy or whatever. When they get into the game, they concede a couple of goals and are so frustrated they decide to do that. I mean, I'm such a stato kind of obsessed individual that I like to keep goal ratios up and stuff. So if I had an opponent like that, I'd just get my forwards and midfielders pushing up, scoring goals to boost their stats, I'd imagine, rather than get too frustrated about it. But the behaviour this season has really had a bit of a nosedive in my experience. And it's exactly as you say. I mean, when you get to a situation where you equalise, maybe in the 80th minute, and then that player chooses to quit because you've been getting on top rather than risk losing. And I've had that scenario, and it's just a little bit like, oh, seriously? You know, you played a fair chunk of the time and you get to that point. And I don't get it. But it's the toxicity, unfortunately, around the FIFA playing community, I think, at the moment, particularly foot. What's motivating them to do that? I have no idea, other than perhaps, those that can play maybe a little bit better or disciplined or patient. And that must be frustrating as well, because my game has evolved since the coaching and is far more patient in build up and working back and forth and passing in different styles and stuff. And I would imagine, you know, somebody that really wants to crash through their games and quickly, and hopes that, you know, they might go one or two up and with a view to me, quitting out, it might be frustrating, and maybe some of that is in play. I don't know, but it's odd behavior. And I really do hope, it's been said so many times before, but EA have got to start thinking on awarding the win to those that quit out. Particularly when you get equalizers, that sort of scenario, it's awful.
Yeah, I do. I did see many people doing like 4-2-4 or 4-1-2-2, just rush forward, see if they can get a quick goal and get you to score, get you to force a quit, right? And the funny thing is, if they did score, they pause even for you and immediately like, I'm not going to go anywhere, right? I need all of the matches I can get going. But yeah, I think this is it. If you don't award the other player a win when the opponent quits, it is double toxic, right? Not only do they quit, not only do you get frustrated by it. I think that's a bit. But it's also a waste of time. Like, it can't take 34 matches to get 20 games in. That's just silly.
Yeah. Yeah. They've given all the control to the toxic players with this current setup. You know, toxic players know they can basically annoy you, right? They can, like, to Paul's example there, that happened to me before. 88th minute, you equalise, they quit. And it's like, ha. I'm like, yeah, but you're so lame. Like, that's literally like absolute loser mentality. Like, why on earth would you do that? So that shouldn't be allowed in itself. Interestingly as well, you talk about like aggressive. I have adapted that because I try and flush out those quitters quite early now to try and make up for the multiple games I have to start.
You can't beat them.
Play 2-3 times. So I do 4-2-4 right from kickoff now. To beat the probably the drop back guys, because that's still, you know, that's supposed still probably the easiest way to play the game to try and get a result, is all my tactics now are on direct passing, because I know it pushes the defense back, it exploits those with a low defensive line, and then all of it, you know, what we see in our masterclasses, we've talked about passing and around the box techniques to try and, you know, be more successful. And that for me is what I do now, because I know I'm coming up against 9 out of the 10 players I play aren't good players. They are bang average, lazy, sloppy players. It's just a mindset, my own mindset. It's concentration for me. I've got to not get bored. And doing games in one sitting when I'm tired was not really a recipe for success. I've actually had more success in Rivals this week, and I've managed to climb into Division 1. Relatively straightforward, which is rare for me. So I think I'm a bit calmer, and I do feel overall calmer to point four, playing a little bit less, playing just the minimum. I can concentrate better.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Sorry, John. Have you also recognized that, I mean, you know, weeks and weeks ago, when people were going to quit out of the few remaining games they had conceded an own goal, so at least it would give the win to the opponent, and then out they'd go. Now it's just start the game, pause, quit. And it's just like, seriously, for the sake of 15 seconds, I mean, why wouldn't you help others to kind of build up their wins rather than, again, waste another, you know, 2 minutes of somebody's time waiting for that load screen, etc., before dialing out? It's just, again, it's just an indication of the community not really helping one another when that sort of thing is just so easy to remedy. And I wouldn't dare do that. If I was going to give a few games away, you score an own goal and you get out of there, or you let your keeper out and let somebody else chip you or whatever, so you give the game away. It's just...
It's still fixable. If they just give the win to the other player, then you wouldn't have to rely on other players having some decency in this, right?
Yeah.
Because I think that's the issue. For them, it doesn't matter. For the receiving party, it does matter. But they won't see you ever again. So, I mean... Mm. And there's no penalty.
I think my advice to players who are going to stare down this absolute sweat fest for the next 6 or 7 weeks.
Yes, because that's a question our dear friend Hawking asks in Discord. Do you have any advice going into probably the sweatiest weekend league of the year with Premier League team of the season coming up, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the stuff is a mental thing, and some of it is probably some gameplay sort of related stuff. I think for me, go back to playing your games in chunks, right? Five games in a row, just do four sessions. I would do that. What I would say though is on that front, and I think this is what got me in the end, if you're on a good run, keep going, because you can hit a bit of a momentum. I think I did. I swung probably seven, eight games in a row. And then when I stopped for that final session, I was useless, and I don't know what had changed. So if you're on a run, go for it. But if you lose, stop, and then just chunk up the rest of your games. I think that will definitely help you. I think if you recognise you're playing against those drop back lazy players who are just literally hitting a couple of buttons, what it feels like repeatedly over and over again. I do think the direct passing as an instruction, a team instruction, does help push your players up the pitch. And I think that will push them back and create you some spaces in and around the box. We obviously have talked about some of the passing. I obviously won't give all the hints away because our masterclass is available on the website. And I definitely recommend checking them out. And I think people in the community who've attended will certainly see the benefit of that in their gameplay. But I think one of the key things is thinking about where you're pressing as well and moving your defensive line. So on that transition, right, because this is what I do. When I'm annoyed and frustrated, I move everyone out of position. And I know I shouldn't. I'm telling myself,
Stop doing it, Aaron.
Stop moving anybody out. The key is do not try and win the ball back in their half unless you're very good at it, right? So if you can second man press and you can apply some of the team D-pad instructions to help you, okay, fine. But if you're not skilled at that, as soon as they win the ball back, I would just not press in their half, and I would wait until at least they start to cross the halfway. Again, don't move midfielders like way out of position. Try and keep team, together, and then look to try and apply a little bit of pressure. I know it's kind of like a bit of a pressure thing. You think, God, they're getting around my box. They're going to score. They won't, because what happens to you when you're trying to attack happens to them as well. That, for me, I think is going to be key in terms of breaking down these players, because these types of players only have one way of playing the game. And if you can break them, right, and they get frustrated, then you won the battle, right? You might not score straight away, but you will win that game, I guarantee it. That would be my advice, because that's what I've noticed when I'm not necessarily, I'm a bit annoyed, and I just think, I'll stuff it. I just end up, and once you move a centre back out 2 or 3 yards, you're done. Absolutely done. So just don't do it, and keep your midfield. I think that's another thing I've noticed. I press quite high with my wingers, my centre midfielders, and as I look back at my gut, and I'm like, why did I do that? It was pointless. Like, just keep them in position.
Great tips. But Paul, you can identify.
And I was just going to say, but Aaron, you can identify immediately when that discipline is broken for whatever reason, whether it's you getting frustrated, anger moment, etc. You know only too well when that happens. And I can kind of accept that more readily. I know that if I've been ill-disciplined in terms of keeping my defensive lines, particularly midfield and those central mid two, whether they're CMs or CDMs, I know that I'm going to cause myself a real issue and might concede. So in some respects, I kind of reset my mind and go again rather than get really bogged down in having made a mistake, because I know now more often than not, unless it's a real good skiller and somebody a lot better than I am, that as long as I keep the discipline, it will be okay and I can kind of recover. And then, dare I say it, I think since my coaching, although I'm trying to curtail the amount of crossing and headed goals that I was once pursuing, and to not so much good effect, I am using the wings a lot more, because I find as soon as it gets bogged down in those central areas, it can be prone to those sorts of errors and kind of positional, you know, bad play, really, in terms of pulling players out of position. So I tend to keep it out there wide, and then bring it in, use triangles, bring it in, and then either have shots more centrally or the odd cross and header or volley. But that's kind of how I do it. And I've found, even though there's all this sweatiness and bad behavior and stuff, I think maybe because I'm playing less, I'm just really enjoying the game, and I feel I'm getting more out of it. And I spoke on the first pod appearance that I made when I had COVID and as I was recovering, but I had probably more time, you know, at home to play and stuff, arguably too much. And I think it's actually quite good. And Aaron, your advice is sound if you can chunk up your games. I mean, I had no choice if I wanted to complete it, but to crash my games, but it's not a great experience, because, you know, if you can break and reset and come at it afresh, you just, you know, it's like anything you do in life. If you expend too much energy for too long a period of time, your concentration levels are going to drop, fatigue kicks in a little bit, you could get frustrated unless you're in a really kind of relaxed state of mind for that entire session. So I think, yeah, that's what I'll be trying to do. And certainly when I get back on my console, I will maintain that discipline, because I think you get most out of the game.
Yeah. John, what's your top tips?
I'd start with why you're playing, honestly. So I got this message, and so why are you going for the 14 wins? I have to be quite honest. I had to ask how much points I had to get to actually get that back, because the whole reason for me playing has never been, but will also never be rewards. That was not proper English, but I think you all understood what I said there. The reason I'm playing is that to see if I can manage through these high pressure situations still, right? Even while my game time is actually being less and less, which is a good thing, which means the company is doing well, so I have no time to actually play that much. And I think I was going in without expectations. I was testing our new 4-3-3 tactics, which became apparent that it's a different beast when you actually play on high stakes. But I think it's good. It gave me a little bit more of insights in it, so I think we got that one tuned as well. And of course, check out the Patreon, patreon.com/footandreview, because the tactics are coming on there this week. But besides that, I think if I go in without actually going for that 14 wins, it's all right. And I think I've always been there, right? Sometimes I get seven. Last time I got 17 wins, honestly, without actually proper focus, just going into and just taking every single game as their own final, as their own game. And I think that's crucial. Just start a game and then play that game, and don't think about, oh, 19 more left to do, or if this is about to go, and I probably miss rewards, because everything that you'll start thinking about will get you off your mindset. So take a game at a time. And this sounds easy, right? I know that, right? But if you have trouble doing that, then stop. And just say to yourself, I'm playing for the wrong reasons. Because even if you play for rewards, right? I made that, and you got 90K out of Team of the Season players. What's 90K? Is that really worth your frustration? You can't even buy a player for that usually, right? Except these three Team of the Season players. I got, of course. So there's that. But besides that, and it's almost never going to be worth it. I played a lot of Weekend League this year, and I've got zero red picks worth that's actually been able to get in my team. Lloris might be the first one, which I'm like, I'm not going to, he doesn't fit, but he could be a part of my team. And that's during Team of the Season. So every other week before this has never been worth it reward-wise. So if you're playing this for rewards, then I would recommend adjusting that mindset. Just play, see how far you get. If you make it, it's all right. If you don't make it, it's not all right. I know players that are very good players when I play them individually. When I see them play a single match or a couple of matches when we coach, then they go into qualifiers and they can't make qualifiers, for example. Or they can't make 11 wins. Nothing to do with their qualities. It's all about them putting a lot of pressure on themselves before actually starting those matches. They are, I need to win this. I need to make sure I get this. If I lose this one, I might be able to not do it. And I think expectation is the mind killer, right, in this situation. So start every single match individually. Even don't keep track of stats at all. I actually had to check at the time, like, how many points do I actually need to get 14 wins? I have no idea how many I actually won. I don't know where I'm at, and I need four more games. But I'm not know if I need to win one or four. And the only reason I was actually checking is because I wanted to give the other games away if I made 14. In the end, it took me to the last game. So it didn't actually matter. But it might be actually that it took me to the last game because I checked how far I was. So just don't count.
Play
your matches. You'll see that number go down during the week. And you got plenty of time now. Usually you have 3 days to push. This time we had at least four. Now we had five, which is brilliant, right? You can play four the day and you still make it. So
I just play for fodder, right? Because I've not packed anything this year, not even picks or packs. I just play knowing I'm going to get something decent for an SBC that comes out. That's basically it.
Exactly. And the last time you said that, you packed Pele, by the way. So,
well, no, that was last year. I've had no pack luck this year. But it doesn't bother me. I'm not playing for that. I'm almost playing now, driven by the fact that my team is so far behind the power curve that if I beat people who've got team of the season, I feel great, right? So I'm almost playing for my own satisfaction of beating players who have much better teams than me, because I know it's not how good your team is, it's how good you are as a player. And that's what drives me. This week, bizarrely, I'm like you. I wasn't interested in the rewards until I noticed the team of the season pack. I forgot it was even there. And then as soon as I knew that was there, I was like, and then all of a sudden I started losing. Right? So that obviously had a subconscious effect, plus my internet connection. So I think, I just think just go at it quite chilled, right? I mean, yeah, this weekend's going to be the most horrific.
Is it though?
But, thing is, right, this is going back to what I was saying, right, you know, and this is funny because I've been, you know, working with some of the guys in the community, and what's good to see is our players are kind of sussing out the opponents and working out how to beat them. And that's what I would say do in the first half, right? You come up against two different types of players, hyper-aggressive, great. We know how to beat them because we've done a masterclass on that. You come up against those who sit back, drop back, great. You know, there's ways to beat them also. We've covered off manually triggering runs. How can direct passing help? What about changing tactics and overloading the box? You know, like, there's ways to beat these guys. Just don't let them get in your head. Yeah, they might score one goal. They might even score two. So what? Don't quit. Don't get tilted. You can come back and get them, because all it will take is one goal and they'll lose it, right? And you beat them. So just kind of stay with it, right? You don't need to win the game in the first 5 minutes. You need to be winning the 90th minute. That's key.
I think that's perfectly sentence. So you are getting some upgrades though, because boys, there have been some players dropping. And now, before we dive into the content that's been released, I have to give two terrific recommendations about players I've used this weekend. And of course they are final players. But there's no bias there. If they were bad, I would definitely say that as well. But I've used Sinisterra. I respect him as well. I don't even know how much he's worth these days.
20K, I think.
I have no idea. But I can tell his stats. He played, he did play 34, but let's say he's weakening. He's 28K or 30K on PlayStation, 29K on Stadia. Talk about Stadia in a minute. He's 4-star. But boy, he's 99 space. Acceleration, sprint speed, all 99. His shots are a little bit low, but you have to boost that. But you can boost that because the speed is already up par. He scored a whopping 18 goals in my weekend league with 23 assists. He's been very underestimated. 20K, go pick him up. And then you say, yeah, but John, he's very hard to link because he's Colombian and he's from the Eredivisie, which is definitely true. But his mate, Kokchu, who's going to be one of the best midfielders, I've said it here, you've seen in Europe in the coming years to come. He's about 40K, something like that. And he's been my central attacking midfielder. And boy, did he have a blast as well. He didn't score that much compared to the other guys. But his other cards have always been good. He's got two players of the month. The last one has been a revelation. But this Kokchu card, 91 rated, goes for 40K on PlayStation. He has got a 5-star weak foot, of course, 3-star skill moves, which is a little bit on the low side, but he's already got great stats. He's got agility, 92, 94 balance, 94 ball control, 94 dribbling, 91 composure, 95 aggression on the central attacking midfielder. This guy has been amazing for me. So I think this is the fun part about Team of the Season for me. Get these cheap cards, try them, and they're viable. You can catch up with using these cards as that left back from PSV. There's been that center defender from PSV. You can get these guys in from, I don't know, 100k. Could be as much as my Wicked League rewards, by the way. Link them with one of the goalkeepers. You're fine. You build half your team for 100k and they're on the power curve. There's literally no reason to be much behind the power curve anymore. Sure, Vieira is great and all these terrific. These guys aren't that far off, honestly. And I think this is the fun part about Team of the Season for me. I've tried these two guys. They've been brilliant. Going to try much more players. If you're listening to the show and you say, I want to know these kinds of players, drop us a message at Foot and Review on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, etc. You name it. Drop us a message there. We'll see if we can test them this weekend as well. There's one player, though, I will not be testing and has been released today. And that is our dear friend from Liverpool, Gomez, who has got a flashback Team of the Year card. And he looks stunning, but he comes in and a whopping 600 and something K, Aaron?
Yeah, it was. I think it was higher than that before when I looked at it. But yeah, I mean, it's I. Why do they always like misjudge the prices of these?
Just a little bit though, medium.
Like I'm just trying to have a look now, right? But like, come on, man, like. How I just think is such a coin drain, and it's so unnecessary. Like, why not just do half the price? Even if it was 300,000 coins, it might be kind of more, kind of like okay to do. I just think it's just, I don't know. I'm sure there'll be some Liverpool fans out there who do it great. You know, I think if I had a team full of like my favorite players, the team I support, right? And I've seen quite a few Liverpool teams actually this year, and they're kind of pretty cool actually. So I kind of get it, but that price now, I mean. I wouldn't be going anywhere near it, knowing you've got Team of the Season coming up for the Premier League. And there's going to be some super overpowered defenders who are going to be like nowhere near as expensive. You know, Laporte is cheaper, you know, by about 100,000 coins. I mean,
and
I guess.
Tradable,
yeah, exactly. And I guess if you've got fodder, right, literally, and if you have, I don't know, because there's been so many SBCs, icon SBCs. I don't know where people are getting fodder from now, but, you know, I just don't get it. They've done a few of these overpriced and really misjudged, I think. And I don't know. No, it's a no from me.
Team of the Year Rudiger is half the coins. Team of the Season Timber, whose stats aren't that far off, is 160K tradable from the market. Drop him in. Build an Eredivisie squad. Who cares? Then you got the Sangare is 60k. He's a center defensive midfielder, although I think he would work pretty well as center defender. And then we got that SBC as well from the Eredivisie with that PSV defender. Boscali, I think he's called. That's 40k. Yeah. Sure, he's a little bit slower, but give him a shadow, you don't even notice anymore.
You've made a good comparison on Rudiger, actually, a card that I loved.
Ruben Dias, so if you look these days, right?
Well, like for Rudiger, for example, right? And this is something I think is key. It's a pace, right? So Gomez's pace stats look better, like 91 compared to 85. But Rudiger's acceleration is better, marginally only by 2. But that's more noticeable because when you are, I think you need a defender for acceleration, not sprint speed. Personally, my observations, and I think that will be way more noticeable. So he's a little bit more agile, Rudiger, as well. I think you feel that in game. His jumping's better, his strength is better, his aggression is better. He will out defend this Gomez card. If you put them in the same team, you would go to Rudiger and go, yeah, he's better.
There's not even a doubt in my mind about that, honestly.
But I'd guarantee it.
And I use Chiellini, right, and I use Marquinho still. I don't see any reason to change. And I think 600k for an SBC. I think the season time is just silly. Paul, I haven't asked your opinion, but you're nodding very heavily. So
yeah, I mean, I'm as I've said before, I'm a Charlton fan. So on the basis that he's an ex-Charlton player, there's a tiny bit of temptation. But then that's ruined by the fact he's got medium work rates. He's 600,000. And frankly, as you said, there's plenty of other alternative options that are a lot cheaper that are going to probably do the same job. And I'm currently running iPaula Prime Icon.
Maldini?
No. I've done that in the past, and I'm not using him anymore. Koeman. Now look at his pace, and it still hasn't deterred me from playing him because I think he's just such a solid player. Perhaps that's why I lost 9 in weekend league. But nevertheless, I still played him throughout the weekend league, and I enjoyed the experience. And you know, and his free kicks and all the rest of it are awesome. So point being, I don't really buy into needing that high level of pace anyway in those centre backs, and so it's not that huge a temptation for me other than the Charlton link. So not enough for me to be saving the coins and the fodder. And on the question of fodder, having done so many SBCs throughout the season, I'm now finding myself with, you know, a lot of those players are just duds. I'm not going to be using them again, and so they're the ones that get fed into these team of the season SBCs and icon roulette games that we have. So that's why I think I've got still enough in stock to play with, but it's from having done so many throughout the season up to this point.
I think the icon SBC might be the biggest throwaway I've ever had. I have 7 icon on my reserve bench now. Sola, pretty cool player. I got Nedved, by the way, who's still in my team, but every other icon is about to get dropped already.
That's why I've never done it. I think
you're on par. You need those big guns, else there's no reason to keep them. Like, I packed Prime Moments Barnes. Right? Like,
yeah, decent.
Okay, decent, but he's not going to replace Neymar. Sinisterra, better than him. Bye-bye. 28K, yeah. Right?
EA's headlines would be, oh, you know what, we gave people the opportunity to pack icons, right? And this is what I love, right? Yes, you did, but they were mostly rubbish, not usable, really short term. But I think this year, what I'm proud of is actually how I've selected my SBCs, and the ones that I've invested in are players who've stuck around for longer. Even still, like Foot Birthday Mkhitaryan's in my team currently, right? Still very usable card, great finishing.
That
for me is an investable card because he's five star. The foot fantasy ones were great, right? Caligari, really cheap, still usable right now. Tonali, well, his upgrades were insane, right? That for me was a clever investment. Kaká, I did, was the only icon SBC, still in my team now, still scoring, still assisting, great player. Probably, you could finishing could be a bit better now, but you know, 3 months ago he was insane. That's for me is what I'm proud of this year. I haven't chased every single SBC, whereas last year I was doing it all the time. I was losing coins. I'm sat on about a coin balance of 500,000. I could probably sell off some players, get it up to 1 million. You know, that for me has been my drive this year. Only do good value SBCs. Don't chase packs, because I think EA are just laughing at the majority of the players.
Yeah, I do think it's really good that they made the Prime Icon Moments now available, right?
So
like Vieira, I think it's really, really reasonable priced. You can get Maldini. I'm thinking about maybe getting Cantona from all these really good players. They are definitely going to be in your team, and they released Prime Icon Moments perfectly in time for team of the season, so there's no rush. Anything before here, I was horribly mistaken. I can't disagree on anything with that. Because what's the use of a best now? And what's the, like all these cards, when I look at my team, it's Chiellini, it's De Vrij, it is... there's plenty of cards, like you said. Tonali, Cagliari, those cards I still have in my team. One gamble that went well, that was with one towards Ronaldo from those specs, right? And that's about it. And all the others won't work. So I'll probably be better off just buying Ronaldo and keep those fodder in it. And I'm still, as we speak, and well, not currently, because, hey, for the recording podcast, but before the podcast and probably tonight as well, I'll probably still be tossing it all into upgrade SBCs, hoping I still can pack a player, which I'll probably use again for fodder So I fell into the trap. And I'm not going to.
But let's look at, right. So then, for example, right, the prime icon moments, I agree. I think it's great they've made, I would say, good players available. These aren't elite cards, though.
Vieira is Cantonais, right? No worries.
So Vieira, right? So as a comparison, Vieira against Sangare, right? Sangare is nowhere near as linkable. I get that. But he is better than him.
No, I disagree. And that's, I think we have a question about that, though, and we'll discuss that shortly. Gus, our friend Homer sends us a message. Do you guys get players based on their total stats or their overall for the position they'll play? And I'll answer this quickly before I get back to you, Aaron, because I do think this is an interesting comparison. I think Vieira's body type and the way he can extend his leg, and you know that once you play him, right, is incomparable with any other player in the game, period. So yes, stat-wise, some players might be faster, stronger, look better, but I've never experienced a center defensive midfielder, a central defensive midfielder, mind me, that's actually on the level of Vieira is. There's not a single midfielder in the game that can make a difference like the prime icon moment Gullit can be. But, all right, I do think that if you look at 1.5 million versus 40k.
So I would agree on one card that I've used, and I do think there is something about some of the icons that I have talked about body type before as well as being a key differentiator. So Desai, for me, that I use, I don't have his prime icon moments. But I think I have his 91 rated. Desai this year, and I feel like his pace is misleading because it just feels like he...
Exactly.
So he has, I think some icons do have a bit of a different feeling to them. Petit is one I've really struggled against. I don't have him. When he came out, I thought, yeah, that could be pretty cool. But then Tonali, for me, is doing a job. I don't feel like I'm weak in that area with any player. But, you know, so if I do a like-for-like comparison, right, on Sangare, right, so... both 92 rated. They are, so total stats, Sangare sits at 5-3-3, Vieira 5-2-4. In-game stats, Sangare 2-5-4-0 against 2-4-6-8. Some key stats for me that I think, so they're similar in height, right? I think Vieira is 1 inch taller. Body type, it might be a bit of a difference, which I do think does make a difference. But I would say, Sangare's acceleration 89, right? That means in midfield, you can close down rapid over like 5-10 yards, which is really key for me. Passing is better. His dribbling is better. His defending is better. And his physicality is better. So as a price comparison, so this is how I'm looking at it this year. I would not be going after Vieira. If I needed to upgrade that position, Sangare is what I'd look at and think, right, how could I then, maybe, I know I'd have to change one or two positions around it, but I'd probably be a left back, maybe, that I'd have to do, maybe as a left winger, maybe as a striker. I think I could look at that Eredivisie team and probably think, yeah, I can find some solutions here. So if I was going to do that. So for me, I look at the whole picture and I always try and compare against something that's elite level and see, right, what's the comparable. I also look at reviews. They are important to help me decide. So for me, comparing them two, Sangare wins all day long.
Good arguments. Paul, if you look at a player, do you look at total stats or do you look at specific things?
Specific things. I always kind of, it depends what position you're looking at. I sort of like a line. There'll be a period, and I've played this for months. I start off 4-4-2, but then in game of... inbuilt the 4-2-2-2, thanks to coaching and your advice, John, and it's still working for me. And as a result of that, I look at the players available, those coming onto the market, and what I'm looking for those players to do. The two that end up being the CDMs, it's really important for me that they've got the right work rates, they've got really good defensive stats, balance, I look at body type, height, and I invariably... whatever they've got, I end up adding a shadow to it to make them really tight defensively. And passing, of course, is really key. So I look at individual stats. And if some look a bit low, as long as I don't believe that it's going to impair that player's ability to do its function in the game for me, then I go with it. And then equally from on the left midfield, right midfield, which turn into cams, it's really important for me that ideally they've got 5-star weak foot and they've got a finesse shot, which I tend to use from the corner of the boxes to pretty good effect a lot. So, yeah, I look at individual stats, really. And also just what I feel like playing with. I mean, I pulled Sangare and I also pulled Zaha, team of the season. And so them both being from the Ivory Coast, I kind of can link them and put one of the icons in at left midfield to do that. And so it's just kind of what is going to feel like a bit of fun to try out and use as well. And as long as they've got, you know, all of those kind of key stats that you're looking for, and Sangare as CDM definitely has, I just kind of go with it and enjoy the experience and playing with a different type player. So that's how I kind of approach it. Most definitely on individual stats for the need of the position that I'm looking to fill.
That is a great summary. A really good. I like a lot of what you said there.
I won't argue on anything of this. I totally agree on everything you said. There's one of the most frustrating parts, I think, as a content creator, as a coach, whatever, is people sending me comparisons. Look, Neymar has 530 and he has 537. So he's better than Neymar or comparable with Neymar. Stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, but he's a five-star, which fits with Mbappe. There's no way I'm actually replacing him. Period, right? Ronaldo isn't a better player than I don't know, who cares? Yeah, but there's also no player that can jump higher and do this for me. So those in-game, those total stats mean nothing. Gomez has terrific total stats. I couldn't care less about Gomez's long passing go, right? Which tremendously boosts this. So I always check, okay, is this player, which position would I run him in? If I check that position, is he then on that position better than player I'm using him? Add in team chemistry or like chemistry cards, right? And I always boost the card, not to get him on a generic level, but get him on the most highest stat on that position. And the difference with these team of the season cards, these prime icon moments, is that you can play around a little bit with chemistry, because most of these players are already boosted on max levels. Like Sinisterra already has max pace on everything, 99-99. So then you can play around. Oh, like his shooting is a little bit weak, but hey, I can toss anything on him to boost that with at least 10, right? So then you can play around with these games a little bit more. But many of these stats, these total stats, the higher, the farther we get, the more total stats they get. To start off with, they all have 99 chemistry, which already, or 99 stamina, which already helps with this. So comparing on the total stats, I think it's one of the most frustrating parts. Work rates matter a lot. Body types matter a lot. And I think if you take those things in consideration, look at the position we're at, I think we're all three aligned here. There's actually much more to look into one player. And next to that, it has also got to do with confidence while playing. If I have a Vieira at CDM, and that's me personally, I'm far more confident playing him as a solo CDM, for example, than Tonali. Because I feel that Tonali is pretty good, but I think Vieira is way better at CDM. I think if I play Ronaldo as striker, I for some reason am far more confident running Ronaldo at my striker than any other player thus far, right? Even though if you put him next to stats with someone, I'm like, yeah, I know he should be better, but whenever I play him, I'm far less confident. And that's also mindset. I think that's also a fun part of the game. I do think if we get rid of chemistry boosts, though, the differences would be far more noticeable. But we have chemistry sets, so you can actually raise stats plus 15 at some areas. So how big are the differences in reality? I don't think it matters that much. But weak foot, for example, since you can't boost that, I think it's far more important. Therefore saying, improving the weak foots on, for example, the Suarez cards now, right? Big kudos. Keep changing those things around, because I think that is the game changer of the team of the season this year, that they're changing those stats as well. Paul, last question. Yep. Are you holding off for a certain league, or are you going all out already on your packs?
I'm not going all out yet. I mean, at the 80 plus, I mean, I don't know how much luck other listeners are having, but and I just had a phenomenal season in terms of pack luck. But when you're pulling team of the seasons as an option from those 80 plus picks, I kind of can stop there by getting rid of a load of lesser fodder. And then I'm really holding out for Liga. And again, I'm questioning why I'm doing that, because when I look at my team as it stands, and having had Team of the Year Messi and Hakimi in my side for since Team of the Year, you just question actually what better players am I actually going to get out of that process. But you never know. A Neymar would be very nice, I think, to complement on the other side, rather than run with the flashback that I'm using at the minute. So yeah, that's it. But Liga, yeah, I'll probably save up a load of packs in lead up to that, and then splash big.
Aaron, you?
Yeah, I'm saving. I'm at probably 110 packs.
I've still, are you a little bit addicted, my friend, there?
Yeah, it's crossed the threshold now. So I've still got icon swaps to do for the packs. I probably need to do those, start those sooner rather than later. I've opened one pack to get some fodder to do the Raspadori, if that's how you say it, SBC, which I still haven't done yet. That's it. I'm all in for Serie A. I'm tempted with the Premier League, but I feel if I've waited this long, I should just keep waiting. And if I can get up to, I don't know, 120, 130 packs, probably more by then, if I keep doing, you know, some of the player picks, etc.
What happens if you don't pick any, though?
I'll quit.
Yeah.
I will delete my account, throw my Xbox out the window, and retire.
You've waited for 6 weeks?
I mean, I've got to get at least the goalkeeper, right? Everyone gets a goalkeeper.
That's fair, though. You get two goalkeepers.
The thing is, I've reached that point now where I almost can't be bothered to sell the fodder, because there's just no money in it. It's not exciting. Last year, I was quite into trying to trade and make coins. It's just so hard this year. It doesn't even feel worth it. So
honestly, that I can also understand, right? I have, quite honestly, I have zero interest of actually buying back from the store, for example. I couldn't care less. I have just opened everything, and I will keep opening everything I get, because I honestly don't care too much. The chance of me picking the top players are slim to none. I really enjoy using the other players. Like, we spoke about Sangare. You know what? I'm just going to get Sangare after this podcast and try him on my team, right? It's those things. So just try it. I think it's fun to try it and do stuff like that. And I think when you really get the highest players, you might actually be in trouble. Because if you do pack them untradeable, you have to fit them in and have to rebuild your whole squad, right?
If I get anybody, it will be an untradeable one anyway. Hence why I'm waiting for Serie A, because it kind of fits with my team now.
Yeah, but if you would open now and you get everything from Team of the Sea, from the community, or you open this Friday and you get three of the Premier League, wouldn't that just make you on par as well, make the grind towards 14 wins easier? And would that not make the chance to actually pack the good Serie A players easier as well?
Nah, I'm loyal to my team. You know, I've built a good team. I'm happy with it. I don't get me wrong, there are some cards that are interesting. I think, with 400k, well, I could build an Eredivisie team, right, and probably go in, have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Could be pretty cool. I could do that. But at the same time, I just think, yeah, but I know, the price of the Eredivisie players, I mean, they're coming down anyway. They're going to probably nosedive once the Premier League comes out anyway. I could pick that team up pretty cheap, right? Not probably lose coins and probably just make my money back if I was to resell. There's still quite a lot of other leagues that are interesting that come out as well. I think the Liga NOS one's going to be quite interesting. I think there'll be some good players in there. I don't know. This year I've taken a more cautious approach, and overall, that's because I don't want to lose money, because I'm not investing in the game. I'm like full on RTG this year, which has made it harder. But because of that, my attitude towards the game is a little bit different. If I was investing in my every month, like with my own money, different. I think I could be okay with it. But I've committed now, so I'm in. I ain't changing my approach.
I think that's totally fair, totally fair. We want to know your approach, though, so tweet at us at Food and Review, or drop us a message, of course, on foodcoaching.com or on any of your socials, whatever. Check it out on Instagram. drop us a message yet, because we are interested in what you are doing to our listeners. And of course, viewers, because hey, these days, one day after the release of the podcast on audio platforms, you can find this show under its own YouTube channel. So then you can have a look at Paul's lovely painting behind him, and he's wearing a beautiful kit, I have to admit. And of course, Aaron's beautiful beanie, who, since the stickers got removed, it looks amazing. And you can, of course, find the links to that merchandise on the website as well. Hey, there's that. This Friday, Daniel will make his return, and he will be joined by none other than the Food Review Teddy Bear, and, of course, Ingvi, the content master, when the team of the season in Premier League has been released. I'd like to thank you all. Keep giving us those five-star reviews on Spotify, and we'll see you Friday. But for now, it's time to drop it, and see you then. Interview.